Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
I said it was my son's birthday, who over the years played a lot of sports, a lot of rep sports, kept us out most nights during his youth with baseball and hockey and things like that. My guest today, we do this on Friday, the brightest conversation on Hamilton Radio, brings someone in to chat about all manner of things. A man who is currently going through the sports parent life that I lived for many, many years. His name is Mike Fortune. He is the father of a star volleyball and basketball player, and he has exactly 2 hours free in his entire week to join me right now. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Scotty. Thank you so much. Hey, a big shout-out to your son, too, Caleb. Happy birthday to him, my man. And, yeah, you know, it's interesting being the father of an athlete. I should clarify, my daughter would kill me if she was known as a star basketball player. She's more volleyball, but she does play basketball. It's an interesting world we live. You know, it's a team. You know, Presley is the player, but it's Team Fortune. It's me. It's my wife. It's people involved to get her to practices on time, make sure she's fed, hydrated, and then we're out 5, 6, 7 days a week. Yep. We just finished provincials. We get a little breather, and then we practice again, we go to Pittsburgh, and then into beach in the summer. So yeah, it but you know what, Scott, I look at it this way, and yeah, it costs a few bucks, it's not cheap, but it's only for a couple more years, and then it's gone, and then I'll be like, what do I do with my time and my weekend?
Oh, now? I can tell you exactly.
Yeah, the honey-do list,
So the year that, so my son had, so the story behind this is that back in 2010, my son was playing Little League, not to bore everyone to death, but he was, and when Ancaster was hosting the Canadian Little League Championships, my guest today was doing the play-by-play while my son was playing in that tournament on Cable 14.
Called his home run shot, I believe.
That's right, one of three.
That's
not
right.
That I'm, you know, pointing that out or anything, but anyway, but when he finally at about 16 decided, you know what, okay, I'm good, I'm done with baseball, sort of wrapped it up, my wife and I in, I don't know, early June, were sitting out in the backyard on a Saturday when it dawned on us, you know, for the past X number of years, we would have been in Indianapolis or Pittsburgh or Simcoe or Toronto or wherever, and we're now in the backyard reading a book, kind of taking it easy, and it was like, I can get used to this.
Yeah.
Now, that lasted about a third of a second, and I realized, but I kind of miss it, too.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't regret, and I bet most people, well, I bet most people who have kids who are in sports probably feel the same way. Hey, it's nice to have free time, but I don't regret that we did that. There are exceptions, because we all know sports parents can be sports parents. There are those who are special. There are those who are fantastic. And but I have a feeling that there's an awful lot of people listening who have had kids in sports over the years that spent all their time, because that's what was required, but when it was over said, I wouldn't mind doing that for one more year.
Yeah. And I
love that. I you know, friendships and all the rest, I wouldn't mind that again.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, Scott, you know, and you know, my daughter's looking at, well, hopefully taking it to the next level where she goes into post-secondary here in Canada, whether it be here in Ontario or out east, out west, and continues to play volleyball, and that will be fun too. But then I know it won't be on my dime, and it won't be on my time as much. I just get to be a fan and enjoy it. So, yeah, listen, to all the parents out there, and I have I also like to get involved. Like, I do a lot of the line calling.
Oh, yeah?
Because when you're in the OVA and at certain tournaments, the parents help out and do the lines. We're not professional linesman by any means.
Yep.
And, you know, things happen back and forth. You know, I stop it pretty
quick.
So
does Presley get about an 18-inch grace period if it's out by 18 inches, it's called in?
Unfortunately, no, she does not. No, I rattle her on. And it's funny, when I'm doing lines, she won't do it to any other linesman or person, I should say, nowadays, heaven forbid. There have been a couple calls where she'll make the hit or the ball, and I'll call it out, and she'll be like, she'll look at me, she's like, really?
Yeah.
Really, Dad? Yeah. And she wouldn't do it to any other ref, but she does it to me. But she also knows. My daughter's a consummate professional already at her age.
Wow.
And she understands the game inside and out, being named captain and all that stuff. So she gets it. And she brings the girls along, and hey, they win a lot, they lose a lot. But you know what? The mistakes, and I don't call them mistakes, they're lessons learned.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what they are, because you're also learning so many life lessons.
Yeah. I used to believe, and I still do to a degree, I used to believe that sports builds character, and I still do believe that it does that. Mm-hmm. I also think, though, that it also shows your character. It exposes your character.
By all means.
And so I especially as kids, I think that you do, you know who I'm the saddest for in sports, and this sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, there are kids who play on teams that never lose. They never lose a game. They're on these super teams, and they never lose. I think that is such a lost opportunity for kids. If you're a parent and your kid never loses, I almost feel like find a team for them some year where they get to experience losing a bit, because I think you learn a whole lot more by losing a few games than winning every single game.
Scott, I've seen that side of it, and I'm to your point. I actually don't mind when my daughter is on some teams and they have a rough tournament and they just, you know, they weren't able to pull it out, or they finished second to last, because it happens. And you're right, it builds character. And I don't get upset about it. And it's so funny. I'm a people watcher. I watch other parents. I watch how they deal with their player, their daughter, and how they act in the stands. And it truly is remarkable. And I sometimes just shake my head. Again, people are trying to relive their childhood through their children's on-court successes or failures. And I really feel sorry for a lot of kids out there, because so much of it, Scotty, starts at home with the parenting. Ooh. And again, as I go back to what I said earlier, that support group around them 24/7. And we have a rule after every game or every tournament. It's a 24-hour rule. We don't talk volleyball for 24 hours to let everyone just digest what happened. And then we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm. And my daughter will go back and watch a lot of game tape back, and she'll pick up on things too. So it's fascinating. I believe this is building a lot of character for my daughter, and I see it for some other daughters on the team too. It's quite the thing.
Well, as I say, I think an awful lot of people listening probably are in this or have been in it, and understand that it's when you're in it, it's expensive, no question, and it's time consuming. But when you're done, yeah, you kind of look back and you go, I would do that over again.
Yeah, and I think I will be in that boat too. And I will, because I love being in the gymnasium. And I will say to all the parents that are out there that are currently in it, be supportive of your child, whatever sport they're in. Be supportive, encourage, and be empathetic towards them. Empathize.
There you go. Wise words from a man named Fortune. We were talking last night on the show. There was a Main Street Research poll that was done in February, and it asked local residents who they want operating the LRT once it gets built, assuming it gets built, if it gets built. And the overwhelming number was people want the HSR to be the group behind it, not some private group from wherever that Metrolinx or chooses or whatever. So, okay, so there's the launching point. But as I'm reading the story about this, John Best, who we have on the show regularly from the Bay Observer, in his story, he was talking to ATU President Eric Tuck. Now, in this poll, apparently, the respondents were also asked whether they are in favor of the project overall, but that answer was not included in the news release. Though, as he writes, ATU President Eric Tuck did tell the Bay Observer that support for the project, quote, has eroded. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that's the case? Do you believe that the longer this thing has gone on, that people are, I'm not saying doubting that it's going to happen, as I may have just, but are turning and saying, we don't really want this anymore? Do you think that's happening?
I do believe that's happening. How long has this topic been going on? 10, 15 years? I know I have.
Well, seriously? Yeah. For a decade. No, I mean, I know that it was talked about before.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But for the last 10 years,
at least
10, 12 years, I know I have done countless interviews on it. I know you have as well. I know I'm at the point where build it, great. You don't build it, okay, I'm okay with it too.
Yeah, but fish or cut bait.
Yeah, exactly. Make a decision. Lloyd Ferguson pointed it out, the former counselor in Ancaster, many years ago, that the more we continue to delay on this, the more the costs are going to rise, which is also happening too.
Yes.
So where are we going to be at this? I'm tired of talking about it. You must be tired of talking about it. I'm sure every announcer on this station is.
So, yeah.
And honestly, even though we're talking about it, I'm quite sure that most people listening are tired of this topic. I get it.
They are. And you know, it was a referendum for basically for one of the elections with the veto Scrow and Eisenberger way back in the day. So, yeah, people are getting tired. People are getting weary. You've displaced people. There's not very nice looking areas in our city right now because of fences and buildings being torn down. Yet we truly don't know what is still going on. So whether you want to go public, whether you want to go private, and to your point, how you introduced this topic, if any of this is actually truly going to happen.
So your mention about the referendum election, some people say that that election, not the most recent mayoral one with Andrew Horvath, obviously, the one before was correct. Eisenberger versus Vito Scrow.
Yes.
And there are people who say that was a referendum, and Fred Eisenberger won. He was the pro-LRT. Therefore, that was a referendum saying Hamiltonians want this. But again, I do wonder if times are chipping away at that support. I don't know. I don't know if it's moderately. I don't know if it's a lot. But it does seem that what you said, I would argue there is that, whether it's that they don't want it anymore. I think a lot of people are saying, make a decision and do something. Enough of just being in the mushy middle.
And you also have to look what's happened over the last number of years, where we have become as a city and as a society, as a province and beyond. There are so many other bigger issues right now that need to be dealt with. You know, it can be the affordable housing. It can be just throw out the list. That's the only one I'm throwing right now. People are tired of talking about, you know, people wanting to tear up our city for infrastructure when there are right now much bigger problems maybe that need to be had. The LRT is going to be a beautiful have. It's going to be a beautiful thing to have potentially. But is it going to potentially fix any issues? That I don't know. I'm not a politician. I don't want to be. I don't get paid to make those decisions. But as a constituent who pays taxes, I believe now, why don't we kind of shift some of our efforts to some of the other things that are going on that can be fixed a lot sooner potentially?
Let me throw out a crazy idea that will, I doubt, ever be considered. But the story that Matthew Van Dongen did in The Spectator mm-hmm. about this recently mm-hmm. was that the last number that we heard for building the LRT was $3.4 billion. Mm-hmm. But that even Metrolinx acknowledged in a Freedom of Information request that costs to do this have gone up by 30% or more for these kinds of projects. So let's just throw out a number, which may or may not be reasonable. Let's say $5 billion now. All right, just, and it may not be that high, it may be more, I have no idea. But let's say it was $5 billion now to build the LRT. At this point, there's a chance, I would think, that other levels of government may start to get to the point where they say, we're not paying that much. Should the city of Hamilton contemplate going to the government, levels of government, and saying, tell you what, you give us $3 billion, because don't forget, we heard recently that we have a $3.1 billion infrastructure deficit. You give us $3 billion to fix all of the infrastructure in town that we need that's falling apart, and we'll call it even. I don't think that would ever happen, because I think that would be giving up, but I that would be an interesting position if they did that.
It would be an interesting position. And Ward 1 counselor, by the way, you need to fix your Aberdeen Road, because I think I just broke all my shocks and struts there. One example. And it's a harebrained idea, I guess. I know what you're saying, but realistically, no, that won't happen.
But then you could dig up the roads and fix the pipes.
I agree.
Fix the roads. You could fix the bridges. You could fix the community centers.
All communication infrastructure, conduit, you name it. Yeah, you could do a great job. But again, then you're going to have counselors getting their hands in it. And, well, we want this and we want that instead. So you know it's not going to happen. $5 billion at this point, for argument's sake, that's a whole chunk of money to make a train for 14 kilometers.
I said this on the show yesterday. I shouldn't do this, but I vacillate back and forth in the sense that I don't believe, like some people, that this is going to be the ruin of our city.
No.
I also don't believe that this is the elixir that fixes everything in our city. It's somewhere in between. It could do good things, it could do some bad things, whatever. But
We also have to remember this LRT isn't necessarily being built for you and I.
No.
This is going to be for my children and their kids if they so decide to have children. So we're looking really far into the future for this thing, but it just keeps getting pushed further and further. So it's going to fall on your kids and my kids' tax dollars. But and it's going to cause a whole bunch of headaches.
Well, there's one other thing with that, and thank you for bringing that up because it's a very good point. If the idea is that this is going to be the first part of a city, eventual citywide LRT, it's taken this long to get the first one built, and it's still not being built. It could be another 30 or 40 years before we get government funding to get the next one built, and then this one might need to be replaced.
I have no doubt it will, or significant upgrades to it.
And so every year that passes, I think this thing becomes more complicated. And I wouldn't be surprised if this Main Street research poll that really was showing that the project has had erosion in support. I'm not saying collapsing support.
No.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if eroded means it's down by 3% or 20%. I have no idea what that means, but it wouldn't surprise me if some people are saying, build it or let's move on and find something else.
Well, yeah, and I'll keep it clean, but it's the old phrase, blank or get off the box, right? When I was in Kitchener last week, I was actually talking, talking to random people. Oh, you live in Kitchener. You ever use your LRT? Whether they be parents, teams we were playing against, some of the custodial staff that were there. Not one person I talked to said they use it regularly. I was on it once and that was it.
Well, let's hope that if ours and when ours gets built, that's not the case
not
here,
the case.
That it is used. After all this, man, we better have people using it.
And I know you and I talked about this on your show earlier. I'm of the mindset, don't have the HSR deal with it because it's going to cost us tons of money. Let Metrolinx handle it, work out all the kinks, and then maybe we can work on a melded solution somehow. Not going to happen, though, I know.
There's a lot of things that came out of this inquiry that were interesting, that raised eyebrows, that got our attention, that maybe people are going to be wondering about down the road. I'll tell you what, though, the one thing that I found the most stunning of any of this is when the Prime Minister says that he gets security briefings but doesn't read them. He waits for someone to tell him if something in there is needed to be, is really important enough, and they'll run this by him. Surely the role of the Prime Minister, the number one role of a Prime Minister or a President, is ensuring that our democracy stays safe. That would seem to me to be the pressing, overriding thing above all else. And I don't know whether I believe that he is saying I really don't, or that he is trying to say, well, I didn't do anything about this, so I'm using it. I don't know, but I just find it hard to believe that a Prime Minister wouldn't read these things.
It certainly is a head scratcher. And look, we know that behind all the top officials, they have people under them who do a lot of the briefings and will do highlight stuff and give you the Coles Notes version and here are some speaking points and all that. But when you get into something this large and you're not taking it seriously, and you're not reading document word for word yourself and engaging yourself and asking more and more questions, you do have to start to scratch your head a little bit and go, what's really going on here with our leader?
Well, it also, okay, so let's say that what he said is absolutely 100% accurate and he doesn't read these briefings and relies upon his people to raise these issues if they exist. Well, who in his office then has been shuttled out of there because they did a crappy job if he was not told about these things? You can't, I don't think you can have it both ways. You either are saying, I'm relying on my people to give me this information when I need to know it. They didn't tell me this, thus they did a bad job, thus they are no longer working for me because I can't trust them. Or I am responsible for this myself, and therefore I drop the ball on this one. Right now, I'm seeing none of either.
And a good leader takes full responsibility, does not blame the individuals below who are supposed to be doing their job, whether or not they blew it or not. When you're the captain of the team, when you're the manager of a group of people, have you equipped them with the proper tools to do their job properly to help you? And obviously in this case, they're not equipped properly and they're not doing the job. Prime Minister Trudeau has to take responsibility for this.
Do you remember the sign that President Harry Truman had on his desk when he was president?
You're going a little bit beyond my age there. No,
it's a phrase that you've probably used before, and you almost said it just a moment ago.
Yeah.
The buck stops here.
Yeah.
Well, that was on his desk. The buck stops here. It doesn't matter who else has got that. I am ultimately the one who is going to take responsibility for decisions that happen in this place. And if the person that I chose to be one of my advisors screws up and doesn't give me the information, I will take the knock for it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be shown the door.
Right.
I'm not going to keep relying on them. But I don't see the buck stopping here with Trudeau, and I don't see anybody in his office that I've seen. I haven't heard of anybody being said, yeah, that person is no longer with us. It seems to me that none of this is being taken very seriously.
You know, and as we're going through all of this, you know, Trudeau is, it's, I don't know where things are going to go in 500 some odd days, what the voting's going to do, because everything can change. Your messaging, your PR right now is probably at its lowest it has ever been for the Liberal Party on the federal level. And it is extremely unfortunate that Trudeau is not standing up more for that. And he's not reading the room. He's not reading the country properly.
He's not
right
reading
now.
The documents.
He's not reading the documents. And as voters, we should be very concerned about that.
Well, a quote from him is, "The best way to convey information to me is to receive a direct briefing from my national security advisor and intelligence advisor. The only way to make sure I receive the necessary information is to give me an in-person briefing or over a secure line if necessary." That's what he said. Meanwhile, a year ago or so, his chief of staff, when she was asked about him getting briefings, she says, oh, he reads everything that he gets. Katie Telfer said, absolutely. He reads and absorbs everything that he gets. Well, so here we are now. We've got, do we have a game of broken telephone where his advisor believes he's reading? He's waiting for her to actually tell him. Mm-hmm. This, we're not talking about someone who's running a gas station, and I'm sorry for those of you who run gas stations.
No,
I'm not trying to disparage you. This is the security of our country. If you have a gas station and you're expecting one of your employees to count the receipts, and they're thinking you're supposed to count the receipts, presumably within a couple days when the receipts aren't counted, you figure out who's not doing their job and you sort it out. This is years. He's been in office for years. And we're still having her saying he's doing one thing and he's saying he's doing another. And they apparently still don't know what each other is doing.
Guys, they got to get on the same page. Unless this is just a truly brilliant move to make the other leaders of the other countries think that, you know, we're not paying attention, we're not doing anything. Yet maybe behind the scenes, Trudeau is building everything up and we are in a good position.
I
don't think he's that smart.
How would be acting not paying attention?
Well, in regards
be building
to
a strength, but you should be saying, "I know everything about what you're doing. Don't try and pull it over on me."
Hey, it's one of those things, you know. Think that we're weak, but really we're not, and we are ready to meet you. Again, I'm just throwing. I'm spitballing. I know it's
under
probably
promise
not the
and over deliver.
There you go. Hey, number one rule in sales: don't over promise and don't under deliver.
Yeah,
but anyways, he's certainly under delivering right now, and this is a situation that has to be taken seriously at many other levels. But unfortunately, you know, it stops with him. And how is he going to handle this moving forward?
But this is one issue. If he's not reading these documents, and now we're to believe that Katie Telfer, his chief of staff, is saying, "Oh, but we've always been thought he was," what else? Has he missed, or is he not reading about
housing, carbon tax?
Could be
you
anything.
Name it. You don't know.
Could be anything.
Yet he's very welcoming to let everyone into our country. You know, he's not reading those documents.
Well, I don't know if he is. Like this is now a huge problem that I think he's going to have, which is if I was covering him, if I was on the, not the campaign trail, not yet, but if I was part of the media that was covering, it would be annoying. But every time he answered something, I'd say, now, did you read these documents to know this? Mm-hmm. Or where, why do you, and he would, I'm sure he would get starting to skip over me, not to ask the same question, but do you know this because you read this document, or where are you getting this information from? Because if you have the leader of the country who's not reading what's put in front of him, to me, that's a huge problem and a huge
disservice.
It's an abdication of his part of his responsibility.
Yeah, hands down. However, remember, we are also in a 24-hour or less news cycle nowadays. Will this truly affect him? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Because people, they can spin things any way they want. I do think the general public, though, is getting pretty wise to Trudeau's thoughts, moves, lack of actions, or lack of, for a better term, too. They're maybe just getting a little tired of his shtick.
Yeah. No. I don't disagree. But this one to me, more than anything,
it has to be bothersome.
You can have political differences. You can have this and that and the other. But to say that I was not even reading the documents that were guiding my decisions to protect our democracy, that to me is a wow. That's a jumbo red flag right there. But anyway, it is national, as we've said off the top, it is National Grilled Cheese Day.
Yeah.
Are you a grilled cheese guy?
I am a grilled cheese guy from home when I can make it for myself, not when there's a food truck that's charging me $15-$18 for one.
Yeah, you know, if you use the good kinds of cheese, I
the Gouda.
The
throw on the Gouda.
So did you know that a deep fried grilled cheese sandwich exists? It's called a Frenchie.
I can see it.
I don't know that the French people are going to be loving that's what they're affiliated with. That just taking a grilled cheese sandwich.
Is that politically correct to call it that even?
Well, that's what the name of the sandwich is, a Frenchie. I would eat grilled cheese sandwiches every day of the week.
So, you know,
every day of the week.
Simple, easy. Now, are you a ketchup?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Or hot sauce.
And are you a, or, oh, I never thought of hot sauce. Oh, barbecue?
Yeah. No, it's, I actually yesterday, as I do occasionally, dropped into a fine purveyor of local hot sauces in this city.
Yes.
Was driving along Barton Street and pulled into Dawson's Hot Sauce, yeah, an unpaid political announcement. Fantastic hot sauces. Anyway, and I will dunk the sandwich into some flaming hot sauces.
Okay. I might have to try that. Now, when you are eating your, are you a, cut it right down the middle or diagonal? Oh,
it's got to be on an angle.
It's got to be on an angle.
It's got to be diagonal for better dippage.
You have to have the better dippage.
You
I understand
have the
that.
Corner that allows you to get more of whatever it is
just
you're dipping.
Because you do the little scoop with the corner.
Of course.
There was a food truck up when we were away last weekend, and there was a family there, and they bought three grilled cheeses, $50 for three grilled cheeses and three drinks.
See, there has
to be. It's awfully expensive for two slices of bread and whatever's in the middle.
Okay, so let's clarify this for a second. I don't know what the food, you don't have to say what it was, but I don't know what kind of cheese. I have grown out of the, I will take a piece of processed cheese that I take the plastic wrapper off and throw it between two slices of white bread.
You've matured with your taste as you've
I have.
Aged. I understand that.
And also, when I bite into a grilled cheese sandwich, I want some oomph in the middle.
Fair enough. Okay.
You know, that one slice of cheese, it melts lovely.
Yeah.
But there's nothing there. There's nothing there. You need to have, and preferably, I will like to get slices of two or three different kinds of cheese to melt together into.
Okay.
But then the trick becomes melting the cheese without burning the bread too much on the pan, because by the time it melts, the bread has been like flaming there for a while.
It's the consistency. I get that. So what I've started to do is
flamethrower.
I put a lid over it. I keep it on nice and low, and I put a lid over it and get that nice golden brown. And then I do the flip and the lid, because now you're keeping the heat in, you're not overcooking it, and the cheese is giving a nice melt. I can't count how many years it's been since I've had a processed grilled cheese sandwich, and I'm getting, the taste buds are like craving for it right now.
You know, one thing I've never tried, and I never will, because even as I'm about to say this, the thought of it almost is enough to make me retch.
What's this?
Has anyone ever tried a grilled cheese sandwich with processed cheese? Cheese whiz?
That would be one
horrendous idea. It's got a preferably good cheese, maybe some, and it can't be too old though. If you get the old cheddar, it doesn't melt very well.
That's correct. That's
it's
correct.
Gotta be, anyway.
Now, do you also have like a little bowl of tomato soup with it?
That was my mother's thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother would always have the tomato soup.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are certain foods that were once upon a time a thing. I think of that grilled cheese and tomato soup as a dinner package of the past, the same way that my grandmother would always eat a slice of apple pie with a chunk of sharp cheddar on it.
Right.
And it's like, nobody anymore eats apple pie with sharp cheddar, I don't think. I don't think anyone, put it this way, I don't think anyone under, I won't even say what it is, under a certain age.
I agree.
Do you know what began on this day in 1980?
Why do you do this to
April 12, 1980.
April 12, 1980. I would have been 6 years old.
The most significant sporting event in Canadian history began on this day in 1980.
As soon as I hear it, I'm going to kick myself.
Fire will.
What is it?
On this day in 1980, a particular fellow from Port Coquitlam dipped his artificial leg
Terry Fox.
Into the Atlantic Ocean and began the Marathon of Hope. And you know, I was thinking about this today when I was reminded of it, because it's, as I said off the top of the show, it's my son's birthday. So there's always that connection now. I always remember. But when I was reminded of it today, I got thinking, I wonder if that could have happened now, because you would like to think a great effort to raise money for a charity would be a timeless kind of thing, and a great humanitarian moment and effort would be timeless, that could happen no matter what. And then I think, but we are so looking for something negative. We are so angry. We're so divided about things. I don't know if Terry Fox could be Terry Fox in 2024.
No, the country, the times have changed completely. I don't think it could. And if it did, would it have the same appeal and energy that it did back then? Now that you've reminded me of what it was, I remember all the excitement and what it was like. You couldn't wait to get home and watch the news or read the newspaper about it. And, you know, you watch some of these documentaries on what Terry had to deal with. And remember, when he first started this, no one knew what he was doing.
No.
There was not a lot of press. It wasn't until
he got to Ontario.
To Ontario and to Toronto, I think, specifically.
Really, yeah.
And I don't know if it would, like I said, I don't know if anyone can really truly repeat what Terry did and what he was able to accomplish.
Well, we just seem so much more cynical now. And maybe people who are a little older than me will say different than that. But I don't know that it was an innocent time. I don't want to make it sound like we're, you know, like Pollyanna-ish. But
I think what would happen now is it would just become too product-driven. It would all
well,
be about
that.
Logos and merchandising. Where back then it was just Terry doing his thing with his group, and he always had those t-shirts on. Now it would all be logoed up.
Well, those shirts would be being sold everywhere.
Yeah.
First of all, which that wouldn't be a bad thing
as long as it all went to charity, which I don't think it would, and you would have people doing rip-off versions and scammers nowadays, it wouldn't have the same oomph.
Well, and would you have one of the news networks or one of the sports networks now having trucks following along? Like it would have been, there was something that was,
it was pure.
It was pure and it was small time almost. It became an enormous thing, but the production of it, a small van that he lived in. I mean, it was so small town, small time.
And nowadays, you know, he would be expected to do social media in between and get drones to follow him. And it would lose what it was meant to do. And Terry Fox wasn't doing this for Terry Fox. He was doing this to let everyone be aware of cancer and what's going on.
I think the biggest thing that would be different, and this is, I hate to say it, this is an indictment on where we are right now, is that somebody would go back and find some social media post that he had made as a 13-year-old saying something stupid, or somebody would have said, what's your stance on the Israel-Palestine thing? And like this thing,
they would make
it
political.
It would be inevitably. There's who in our society now who is a celebrity has not been pushed into a position where you like them or you don't like them because of their politics? Who is there that has become, that is apolitical and has no political sense? I can't think of the celebrity.
I'm sure they're out there. And even if they are out there, the media would hound and grind. And even if you said, you know what, I'd prefer to keep my comments to myself, boom, you'd get hammered for that now.
That's right. So if someone said to you, well, whose side are you on with Israel-Palestine? Which has nothing to do with this, but nonetheless, that would come up. And you say, I don't talk about that. I'm here to raise money for cancer. You're right. Somebody would say, he is not interested in the lives of Palestinians, or he's not interested in the lives of Israelis. The whole thing,
he would be ridiculed.
It's a no-win situation.
And it would take away from the whole experience of, I'm a guy here or an individual who is just trying to make awareness for something and do something good. With no, Terry didn't do this for money. He didn't do this. There was no strings attached. He was just doing it for him to raise awareness. And I think the Terry Fox run is still around. They do walks and all that.
100%. Yeah.
But I
still raises millions of dollars.
Does it?
Oh yeah.
I don't hear about it anymore.
Fall, I think it's either September or October at schools. The schools all do it. And yes, it still raises millions of dollars, and it's a great thing. And you know, good for Fred Fox and Daryl Fox, and if I'm forgetting any of the others, I apologize, but that they have managed to stick handle it so that it's not a political thing. Mm-hmm. And good for them for that, because the minute you put your stake in the ground politically, you cut out half the country.
Yep.
So good for them for that. That's fantastic. You know, and maybe I'm being cynical. Maybe a guy who comes along and does something as pure as this maybe this is exactly what Canadians today would be looking for and would do the opposite of what I'm saying. Maybe they wouldn't ask this. Maybe they wouldn't want him to dirty up the run with something. Maybe he'd be allowed to be the same Terry Fox. I don't know, but I can't imagine that.
If an individual decides to do something like this again, they will have to be a very special individual with a very strong mind, strong heart, and stick to their guns and not be swayed by anything. And then you'd probably have to have the whole huge PR team behind you too. Remember, it was Terry and a guy in a truck.
Yep.
And you had some police escorts, and then it got bigger and so on and so forth. I don't know if it would have the same cachet. And I don't know if people would really follow along as much. Maybe they would. It's tough to say where things would go right now.
Doug, what's his name? Doug, I had him on the show, and I'm apologizing for forgetting his name, who was his media spokesman during the run, who joined him when he got to Ontario or just before Ontario. Doug Hallward? I'm sorry. Someone will remember his name, and I feel badly. But
what was his role like? Well, like, what was he talking about?
He had one guy just to call ahead and get interviews lined up when he got to the next town. But it was a guy.
Wasn't a team.
It wasn't an army of people that were,
outfitted in a certain apparel and all this
stuff. Doug Allward.
Was it Doug Allward?
No, that was his best friend. I can't remember now.
Doug Allward, he was the guy that drove the truck for him too, right?
Yep.
And you watch those documentaries, and there were things that Terry, he was angry at times. He was mad at times. He was frustrated at times.
I would have been too.
Sure.
Running a marathon every day.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I've thought about this a lot over the years, and it's a dangerous thing to wonder about because it's totally hypothetical, And we thought about this actually. So almost this exact time last year, my daughter was graduating with her master's from university in nursing out in BC. And we went out for her graduation and we went to Terry Fox's gravesite.
Oh, really?
In this little tiny Port Coquitlam cemetery that you almost couldn't find. Like you would never just stumble upon it. And his gravesite isn't a majestic thing. It's one of those flat, almost
right
like,
in the ground.
Almost. A grass little bit more than that.
Grass is kind of grown over it.
Almost. Almost. But it was very understated and everything else. And I, as I recall, when we were there, one of the things we were talking about was if Terry Fox had lived, would we still think the same about Terry Fox today as we do? And not that he had done anything wrong along the way, but you know what? In the course of someone living their life, they're inevitably going to say something or do something that knocks away at some of that veneer that sure. somebody disagrees with. That, you know, when you die at 21, 22, whatever he was when he died, you know, like so many celebrities who've died young or whatever, you don't, I don't.
Yeah, but remember though, Terry wasn't a celebrity when he started this.
No.
He was a
nobody.
He
sure was though when he died.
By the time he passed, yes, he was. But again, it goes to the point, he wasn't doing this for celebrity status. He was doing this for a cause. So many of these young celebrities that are passing away, they have all these other things going on. And Terry was doing it for all the right reasons. And to hear that his plot is simple and basic, I think that sums up nicely as to who Terry Fox truly was at the heart of it all. He was a simple guy just trying to do a good thing for people. And I think nowadays people would be doing it for possibly the wrong reasons. I hope I would be proven wrong, but I think people start to do more things for themselves than they do for others nowadays.
Yeah, it. I would hope, and again, we'll never know. It doesn't really matter because he's gone. But it seems hard to imagine that you could live a full life and somebody wouldn't take issue with something you said, or you wouldn't have a slip. I mean, look, the closest that I can think of to a guy who has managed to not find controversy is Wayne Gretzky. Right? Wayne Gretzky played most of his career and nobody was, but there were still a couple, very small, but a couple times remember early on in the days of the New Jersey Devils, he called them a Mickey Mouse organization. And, you know, the thing with Team Canada where he said everyone's against. Like there were things little that things. Were done. Little things. Didn't stick really.
But again, not in a social media era. Not, so it didn't get the traction.
That's right.
Right? And it was a comment made by the greatest hockey player of all time. Oh, Wayne says it must be true. Right? They kind of drank the Kool-Aid, if you will, when Wayne talked.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if...
Now, Wayne's still kicking around. He still could open his mouth and say something really stupid and ruin his whole career. Who knows?
Yeah, but I think it's unlikely at this point. But yeah, it's an interesting one. This day in 1980 was the start of that Marathon of Hope. And I don't know, as we go to break here, I just don't know that there is a possibility for anyone in this country ever to do anything that will usurp that.
I truly can't see it with, as you mentioned, with so much political divide, so many things going on.
Because everybody was on board with this.
Yeah.
There was no, because of no politics, everybody was a believer in what he was doing and was behind him. And there was no camps.
He truly brought a country together.
So yesterday we learned that O.J. Simpson died. That song came to mind immediately for me because I always thought it was very odd that the one song that we'd ever heard by a guy named O.J. was about that. But, you know, we were just talking about Terry Fox and a guy who did everything to bolster his reputation and his legacy and everything else. I don't think he was doing it for that reason, but I can't think of another person in retrospect now, not even in retrospect, like O.J. Simpson, who had everything popularity, money, fame, careers,
good looks, women,
good looks, everything,
family,
everything.
He had it all at his fingertips
and blew it as magnificently as he did.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who will have other examples.
Of course.
But it's so striking that when you look back now at the entirety of his life, the full, he had everything. And lost it.
Goes on a jealous rage, and that try. And it's funny, you know. My since OJ passed, my son, who's a student at Brock University, he's been texting me, been asking me. He goes, "Oh, do you remember when this happened?" I'm like, "Boy, do I? I was his age. He's 20. I was his age at the time when the car chase happened in 2004, I believe. Oh no, 1994,
yeah,
1994." And it really changed television, news, how news followed events and all that. And yeah, a gentleman, I guess I still call him a gentleman, a football player who just didn't, and then when he even got, even when he was acquitted, he went one step further. He got charged with B&E and selling, like.
Well, yeah, with robbery.
He just
put him away for a long time.
He just didn't get it. And who knows what was going on up here, but jealousy got the better of him. And yeah.
You know what was maybe to me, and I learned this late last night. I hadn't seen this during the day yesterday when we were on the show. And I had to double check that this was not a joke. The White House, upon his death, expressed condolences to O.J. Simpson and his family and didn't say a word about Nicole Simpson or Ron Goldman. How, after all these years, how do we still not get it? That's the thing I don't understand. If you're going to say something about O.J. Simpson, if you're the White House press aide, because it wasn't Joe Biden, it was whatever her name is. If you're insistent that you're going to say something about O.J. Simpson, are we not at a point when you know, even if you don't mean it, mention the victims because otherwise you come across horribly?
Of course.
Horribly.
Yes. Yeah. Give the full context of what OJ's life was truly like. And you'd mentioned, you know, Norm MacDonald at the time. He just ate that stuff up on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Norm. Norm. Here's the quote, and it's by Karine Jean-Pierre. Our thoughts are with his families during this difficult time, obviously with his family and loved ones. And I'll say this, I know they've asked for some privacy. We're going to respect that, and I'll just leave it there. I don't even understand what is the White House? And I mean, what are they even thinking?
Why would they even care?
Why even mention it at this point? What's the upside? I can tell you that I will be shocked. I will fall out of my chair if the Buffalo Bills, who he became famous for. I'll be shocked if the Buffalo Bills honor him because there's no upside.
Nope.
I'd be shocked if NBC Sports honors him where he worked. There's no upside. The guy who directed the Naked Gun movies said something on Twitter, but basically said, good riddance. Sorry, you had it all. Same what we just said. You had it all and you blew it. Good riddance. What am I supposed to say? It is just, it's amazing to me that we still have people who is the White House taking the position that because he was acquitted, he didn't do it? I don't think there's anybody, if they were being truthful now, people may have wanted him to get off for any number of reasons, social reasons, mm-hmm. And they're very complicated. And I don't understand them because I'm not in their shoes, but I can see that there would be people who would have a variety of reasons why they would want him to have beat the system or got the benefit of the system. That stuff I can sort of see that. But does anybody really think he didn't do it?
Oh, so it's funny you say that because my son actually reached out and he asked, you know, do you remember? And I do, and all this stuff. And his next question was, oh, wow, that's pretty interesting. Do you think he was guilty? And without hesitation, oh, he did it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt he did it. But when you have, you know, you got Johnny Cochran and Shapiro and you know, a jury
that wanted to acquit him by the looks of it.
Oh, hands down, because he was a superstar and he's our OJ and all this stuff. And Man, oh man, they played the media, they played the fiddle, and you know, if the glove don't fit, you have to quit, all that stuff. It was all very well orchestrated behind the scenes on OJ's team. Yet he basically was given a second chance, and then he still ruined it again.
And you know, here's the thing that really drives me a little bonkers today, and there's a lot about this that really sort of infuriates me, is that he lost a civil trial and was apparently at this point, with interest and everything else, owes the Goldman and Brown families like $100 million. Mm-hmm. He was living in a luxury multi-million-dollar home in Vegas, was able to go and play
golf every day,
never had to pay. And now he leaves, like, I don't expect that he was going to do the honorable thing when he left and say, I'm leaving several million dollars. Because here's the thing about it. Even if he wanted to, till the end of time, say, I didn't do this, she was still his wife.
Yes.
And Ron Goldman was still an innocent guy who,
yes,
he could have very easily said, I'm not acknowledging guilt, but I am, as part of my estate, leaving $10 million to each of them to try and it's amazing to
and
me.
Maybe something might come out in a will. We don't know.
I guess.
But every day, you know, he wakes up or he talks to his son and daughter. He's looking into his ex-wife's, you know, eyes, more or less, you will, that brought... And how you are able to live with yourself after doing something so horrific in such a grotesque way is mind-boggling to me. And to put on he's putting on the TV face. He put it on every time the camera was there. He knew how to play the media. So, it was something I'll never forget. You never will forget. It's an interesting case, I think, for young children and people to follow and read up on, and it will be one for the ages, that's for sure.
Well, it's so interesting to me that, as I say, that we're talking about Terry Fox, because this is the anniversary of him starting, that these two things happen on back-to-back day. The two people who could not have...
Polar opposites.
With how they... One built a reputation, mm-hmm, out of nothing. One ruined a huge reputation.
He had everything. It is crazy. And hey, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless on talk radio here. But you look at everything it led to, and how it all came to be. A lot of people made a lot of money off of that trial, And like I said, it really changed network coverage of news, I think, too.
How many people, we got to take a break here, how many people that never, ever, ever, ever would have had an ounce of fame became famous as a result of that? I mean, I can probably
Marcia Clark.
I can probably name 10 people off the top of my head. I hadn't planned this. Lance Ito, mm-hmm, Marcia Clark, Chris Darden, Barry Scheck, DNA,
yep,
lawyer, Roger Cossack and Greta Van Susteren, who were on CNN every day about it.
Who was the police officer there? There was the police officer.
Van Adder. Like,
right?
Again, it's like, it just, and we could go on and on. Cato Kalin.
Cato, the roommate, the beach boy bum or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just how many people, and that's like the tip of the iceberg of the people who, Mark Furman,
yeah.
Who
Johnny Cochran.
Who probably didn't want
Shapiro.
The fame that came with it.
No.
But
I remember Cato. I remember he was just eating it all up. He was loving every minute of the media attention.
But it's just, it's an amazing, you're right, the money that generated, it became a money thing. It became a money thing that, you know, if they could have kept that trial going for 7 years, they would have done that.
Hands down.
There might have been 5 more murders because jurors would have, who were sequestered, might have killed other people.
That's for sure.
Anyway, talk about two vastly different lives, one to be honored and one less so. So the Arizona Coyotes, by the sound of it, I bring this up only because, you know, we definitely have a sense of a connection to that team in a not positive way. The Arizona Coyotes, it seems, as early as next week, could be playing in Salt Lake City. They're saying that by April the 18th, they could be the Salt Lake
Coyotes.
Probably not.
Salt Lake Salt Lickers.
Somebody suggested the Salt Lake Sister Wives, which I thought was quite humorous, but I don't think it'll be chosen as a team name. But it is just, it's amazing to me still, Mike, that in a league that wants to build its revenues, that when a team struggles, and look, I can argue all day that they should come to Hamilton, and I know about the Maple Leafs, and I know about the Sabres, and I know about sure. the geographic stuff. I get all that. But if you are wanting, if you're going to go to a team in the States that has very little hockey history and is not one of the biggest cities in the States, all right, if you're going to argue about going to Chicago or New York, you're talking Salt Lake City. Would Quebec City not be your better option?
I would certainly think so. In a hockey country where the sport has so taken off. But you know what I do think? Again, I've never met the man. I don't know. I just see him on TV. I think a lot of it has to do with Gary Bettman's ego.
Stubbornness?
He does not want to admit faults and some mistakes. He's much smarter than I am. I'm just a guy on the outside who's a hockey fan who watches these things. But man, oh man, he sticks to his guns and he won't come out and say, you know what? This didn't work. Let's move it elsewhere. Because then that shows a little weakness, a kink in the armor. And then his bosses, the owners, will probably think, why do we have you here still?
If I'm the Players Association, though, my salary cap is based upon league revenues. The more revenues the league brings in, the higher the salary cap goes, the more money for players. If I'm the Players Association, how am I not putting up the most enormous fight saying, why are you putting it in another city that has no, if we go to Quebec City, surely we're going to have greater revenues, which means more money for players. Surely.
It must just say that there already is huge revenue, the TV revenue, the jersey revenue, the social media revenue, the online betting revenue.
Which you probably can't do in Salt Lake City. Correct. I don't know what the rules are for betting there. I know what the rules are for alcohol and beer and everything there.
There's so much money coming in. Maybe that just isn't a big issue right now.
Well, sure. I mean, it's always, that's what all of these things are. The expansion and everything else. It's always all about the bottom line. I just don't get why you would go to a place that isn't bringing you your greatest payback. And if the argument is, well, you know what? We go to Salt Lake City. The argument is, everybody in Quebec City is already a hockey fan. So we've got no growth. We're not growing. They already watch Hockey Night in Canada. We're not growing anything. If we put it in Salt Lake City, maybe we grow the game and we get more fans. Maybe.
You build on the legend of what happened in, was it Salt Lake City?
2002.
Right? But then you also build on, what happened with the Dream Team? Wasn't that also in Salt Lake City there?
No, the Dream Team was in the 80s
there?
Barcelona.
Oh, was that Barcelona?
Yeah, in 1992.
When the USA
or 90?
Beat Russia or whatever? Okay,
sorry. Oh, no. Wait, sorry. I'm talking basketball.
No, I'm talking about the hockey team beat Russia.
Not in Salt Lake City.
Okay, so it wasn't Salt Lake City. See, I'm getting it's late on a Friday. It's 10 to 8. I haven't eaten yet. Anyways, you try to bring other fans and build on something that could or couldn't be there. They've had the Winter Olympics there, so maybe something could fester. Who truly knows? You bring it to another generation. You know what happened? Gary Bettman's going to say, "Well, look what's happened. Came from Arizona. We have Austin Matthews. He's going to win the Ted Lindsay this year." If we can get someone else like that now coming out of Salt Lake City, it grows that way organically, maybe.
So, yes, the NHL being in Arizona did create Austin Matthews. I don't think there's any dispute about that. And Matthew Nyes, if you want to go there as well. There's sure. a couple other ones. Sure. And I'm not convinced that had Arizona been done right, that it might not have worked better than it did, but it wasn't done right. And it wasn't done right for a long, long time. And it just carried on and on and on and on. Well, now what assurances do you have that when you go to Salt Lake, I have way more assurances, I believe anyway, that if you come to a Canadian city or a northern, even if we don't want Canada, a northern city. So it's just, but this idea that we have to have all the teams now. Now, I understand that they put a team in Seattle. The only reason they put an NHL team in Seattle is because you want more teams on the West Coast. You got a bunch of the California, you got Vancouver right there. If the Canucks were not there, I don't know if they put a team there. I honestly don't. If there weren't teams already in California. Anyway.
Yep. I see where you're coming from. There is this
seeming desire that all good things must be in the American South. There will be a team playing in Mobile, Alabama before there's a team in Quebec City or Hamilton. And again, the Hamilton thing, I'm not going down that path because it's so.
And I'm not upset by that. I personally don't think Hamilton deserves a team. I don't think we'll ever get one. The Quebec one though does stymie me. And again, I think it's ego and stubbornness on Gary Bettman by saying, "All right, let's give it a second chance." When really,
They're talking about going back to Atlanta for a third try, despite the fact that that has been a colossal, colossal failure both times.
No. What's Atlanta known for? The Masters. That's it.
Yeah, well, that area, yeah.
That area, right? So Gary must have his reasons. He gets his directions from his bosses, as we've talked about. Put a minor league team in Arizona. Build it that way. Create some grassroots hockey. And don't worry about the professional stuff. And then you got them playing all these stupid little arenas. How do you make this change with only a little bit of time left in the NHL season too? I've never seen that.
Something like that before.
No.
What will be fascinating is I have now heard and been reading stories that a lot of the players who play for Arizona are furious about this.
Of course they are.
They've bought homes down there. You know, they may love to golf, whatever else. Won't it be a fascinating story if? And again, I've never been to Salt Lake City. It may be the most beautiful place on planet Earth. I've not been. But if all kinds of NHL players refuse to sign a contract to go to Salt Lake City, what happens then? What happens if you've got guys who won't sign free agent deals because you don't want to go to that market where the bars close? If they have bars where they're closed earlier, you can't get a beer after a game or...
Then I guess they don't play hockey.
Well, I don't know. Or you have the worst team ever because you can't sign anybody. Now, maybe the dollar speaks louder and maybe, you know, a mediocre player who gets overpaid. I mean, guys go to Winnipeg and a lot of guys say, I don't want to go to Winnipeg, but you pay enough money and people go, maybe it overrides everything. But
there's a difference. So you go to Winnipeg, you're in the heart of our country where hockey is a huge thing.
Yeah.
It means nothing in Salt Lake City.
You go to Salt Lake City, you are the second team behind the Jazz. You're not even the biggest news on the block. You're maybe not the third team because the University of Utah or, you know, the Utes or whatever else. I don't know.
But just imagine if this does take off, then what's going to happen? It's going to make Gary Bettman look like an absolute hero again. Like you just don't know. He's going to be loved by his owners. More money coming in.
I will keep my powder dry on the Gary Bettman, the hero.
I know.
Especially around here. However, Mike, thanks for coming in today.
Always a pleasure, man.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening. And do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.